You know how TikTok connects to Wi-Fi? Now your government does too. We now have more windows in all of your clouds. And I'm sorry, Kelvin. Please don't go away. I need you to stay. And I apologize, but these stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
Build the impossible at CompTIA ChannelCon 2023, running August 1st through the 3rd at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas, Nevada. Join other technology innovators and peers to solve problems and create new opportunities in 3 days of learning, collaboration, and transforming your business and career. Speakers include Eric Anthony, Aharon Chernin, Vince Chrysler, Bob Coppage, and ChannelCon's 2023 keynote speaker, Mick Ebeling. Be inspired. Build the impossible. This $1,200 value is yours at no cost when you register with promo code SBOIT23 or scan the QR code on your screen.
Good morning and welcome to the June 30th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Rossini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing, Tony?
Excellent, brother. Excellent. Dude, this is episode number 128. 100
How crazy is
and
that?
28 you and you have not killed me yet. This is amazing. Like we're friends.
is that what we're looking for? Is that like if you don't show up like for two episodes in a row, Kelly starts knocking on my door like wait, where is he?
that's how I knew she liked me. I'm like, oh, she's still talking to me. This is really nice. What's going on? Talk to me.
So I got some news. I got some exciting news before we get into the banner topic. We're going to be launching a new show on the MSP Media Network on Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern to 8 p.m. Eastern. The first episode will be with myself, Matt Topper of ConnectWise, Ashley Cooper of MSP Geek and Roost, and Kelvin Tehelar of CyberDrain and Lime Networks. And what we all have in common is that we're administrators or moderators of different MSP communities. So RMSP on Reddit, MSP Geek, MSPs are Us, CyberDrain community. And that's exactly what the new show is, MSP Community Live. We're going to be taking the top stories in our different communities and talking about them live and giving feedback and talking to people in the chat and doing what we do. And it's just having fun with the community. And it'll be starting every week, starting this Sunday at 7 p.m.
So just to be clear, MSP Community Live is like the MSP Dispatch talking about news, but in real time from the community that we're actually talking to. This is like Malkovich. Like we're talking about the people that we're talking to with the people that we talk with.
Oh, total white van falling off the bridge inception thing. Absolutely. The only thing that can make it better is if we start talking about MFA, because then we come here and we talk about MFA and then we go back there and talk about MFA. It'll be fantastic. But you know we haven't talked about in a couple of days?
Talk to me.
We haven't talked about Elon and Zuck, about their little spat. Unfortunately, I don't think that cage match is going to happen. Elon Musk's mommy says he's not allowed to get in the cage fight with Mr. Zuckerberg. We remember we talked about the banter last on Tuesday, talking about Zuck and Elon were going back and forth on Twitter, which is ironic on its own, talking about how they were going to get into a cage match. And they started doing like these little schoolyard taunts and all this nonsense. And now it's a whole lot of nothing. Apparently, May Musk, M-A-Y-E, I know they're South African, so I could be butchering it. I apologize. Prefers a verbal battle between the CEO instead of a physical fight. So, yeah, mom said no. It's not going to
happen.
I'm
telling you right now, just being blunt about this, the Zuck is no joke on the mat. Like he's, I mean,
I know he's been training. Like he's been training for a minute.
Yeah.
But he's also, I know he's also, I'm sorry because I know I'm slightly taller than you.
he's my hobbit size. He is my hobbit size.
There is a significant 4 or 5 inch difference in height between Zuck and Elon. And I'm not saying that's everything. And there's a significant reach and weight difference. And I'm not saying that's anything. When I used to do martial arts when I was younger, I'd hate fighting the little guy because it was so easy for them to get inside. And that sucks. But it could be fun. I still hope it happens. Even if it's like a celebrity slapping match or something, I just hope it happens. Yeah. But we'll Tony, we're not here to talk about banter. We're here to talk about news. Let's do it.
Let's get into the news. And jumping into my first story from securityaffairs.com. That's securityaffairs.com. I'm saying it because we're all laughing. Experts have found hundreds of devices within federal networks having internet-exposed management interfaces. Census researchers have identified over 250 instances of publicly accessible remote management interfaces in federal networks, in contradiction to BOD 23-02 directive from U.S. CISA. The investigation of 50 federal civilian executive branch organizations uncovered 13,000 distinct hosts, with approximately 1,300 hosts accessible online. This subset included Cisco network devices, Cradlepoint router interfaces, and firewall solutions like Fortinet, FortiGuard, and SonicWall. The study also found 15 instances of exposed remote access protocols and multiple out-of-band remote server management devices. Furthermore, the report identified several exposed managed file server tools and over 150 instances of end-of-life software. Per BOD 23-02, FCEB agencies must secure these devices within 14 days of identification. So, Ray, if we unpack this, do as I say, not as I do, is applicable here. What am I missing?
I don't even know who uses cell phones anymore. I just destroyed mine on the street, and I'm like, that's it. That's, no more devices, no internet, no problem, right?
Yeah,
like,
no. Who's going to have a device in the network? No one's going to have a device in the network.
But what there's this government agency that releases, like, infrastructure and security advisory. It rhymes with MISA. Have you ever heard of... Oh, CISA! Isn't their job to actually advise on this stuff? Like... Aren't they setting the recommendations and the frameworks and the? I mean, if they need an MSP, we can help.
Is this a do as I say, not as I do scenario? Is this the hey, we're not going to eat our own cooking scenario? Is this the hey, maybe we're asking too much and there's a point of diminishing returns on everything we can actually practice, and we're witnessing that in house for the full time? And could that impact the very CISA regulations that they're imposing, or make them even tougher with penalties involved? So many questions about this.
I mean, I look at this stuff, and I look at, like, the federal government ban on TikTok, on government devices, right? But then you see AOC, you see other lawmakers on TikTok every day. And there's some of the newer Congress people that, you know, they're going through their whole, like, their entrance as a freshman, and they're going through all the, you know, talking about their experiences on TikTok. And I'm like, okay, so are they on the Wi-Fi? Are they on, like, their own cell service? Like, where are they doing this from? And so you have to account for, even if you say something, it's not always going to be followed exactly as you want. And you need to be able to account for that. And somewhere in the middle between strict and laissez-faire, there is a reasonable medium. And I think possibly if you make security a little easier to digest, maybe users will be more apt to follow those practices. Or you just beat them to death, whatever. Yeah, one of the two.
But it's clear this is not, let's be blunt, all the security people out there, I'm talking to you. If you implement a security policy, do you expect people to self-actuate? Do you expect them to self-initialize, self-enforce the very thing you have put in place? That's a question that you should ask yourself right now, because we all know the answer. So if the answer is, and I'm just throwing this out there, no, what can we do to absolutely, with zero margin of error, enforce the engagement of, the enforcement of, the continual education of, the reasoning of this particular policy, where you're not making it, in this case, it's almost parenthetical. It's kind of it's so ancillary. We're leaving holes in the platform. These Congress people you mentioned, they're not on the guest Wi-Fi. They're authenticated.
So you're saying they're not doing sticky Macs and certificate based adoption? Are you serious? No. No, I swear if I log into like the Congress Hall Wi-Fi and it's a Facebook login, I'm going to lose it. I'm absolutely going to lose it.
Before we jump, because I want to talk to the security community more about this. It makes me angry because we all see this every day from our users, but this is literally these are the people that are telling us the rules that are not following the rules. So, but can you imagine if, I don't know, like an entire organization moved to the cloud? But who would want to move to the entire everything to the cloud? That's the question I have for you.
Like your operating, nobody would want to move their everything to the cloud. I mean, nobody except Microsoft. Microsoft wants to move Windows fully to the cloud, as per Tom Warren on The Verge. Microsoft is aiming to shift Windows fully to the cloud. The company sees it as a long-term opportunity to enhance the consumer experience and enable AI-powered services through cloud streaming of the full Windows operating system. Windows 365, which currently offers cloud streaming for commercial users, is being integrated into Windows 11. Microsoft plans to introduce features like Windows 365 Boot, enabling direct login into a cloud PC instance, and Windows 365 Switch, integrating cloud PCs into virtual desktops. Alongside the cloud strategy, Microsoft is exploring custom silicon partnerships, including designing ARM-based processors and potentially AI chips. The company is also focusing on shoring up the commercial value of Windows and responding to the threat posed by Chromebooks. Furthermore, Microsoft is investing in AI-powered features such as recently announced Windows Copilot, an assistant that can summarize and explain content. This aligns with Microsoft's broader ambition to leverage AI for improved services within Windows. Tony, I mean, we're going to take all of our stuff. You know what this reminds me of? My sister got a Corvette back in... this had to be the late 80s, early 90s. And the full dashboard was all LCD. It was, every gauge was digital, every single one. And when there was an electrical issue, guess what didn't work? Everything. So, I get it. I completely understand. Everybody has multiple avenues of internet connections. Everybody has really cheap and reliable, 100% full-time reliable internet connections. And the cloud never goes down. Not like the Teams web outage that was down for 2 hours earlier this week. I mean, Microsoft seems spot on, right? Like, right? What do you think, Tony?
Okay. Let's talk about this. I'm talking to my technology people out there. Let's talk about the different types of boot processes from motherboard boot, from a cloud perspective. This could be the holy grail. Follow me on this one. Follow me. Let me just be blunt, Ray. I think you get it right away. I'm talking to the normal people out there that don't have 50,000 monitors around them all around, like you. So back to my people. In this scenario where you have an entirely cloud-based operating system and nothing but, let's just say, HTML, you know, whatever you want to call it, interface. You're going to have problems if there are any problems, not only at the source, the server that's serving this display, but also the transport process. What's the mechanism? Is there an internet problem? Is there a processing problem on your side for translation? Did somebody hack, slipstream something in along the way? And there's a variety of things that could happen there. But on the other side of that, if you have everything local, you don't have to worry about any of those problems externally. You now have a very localized concern. However, If you can have a combination of the two, think Microsoft Outlook with a cached version of what's on the Exchange server time. I'm dating myself, everyone. I literally just sent half of our audience like a Twitch. They're like, oh.
Public folders. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, public folders. Oh, my gosh. And then worrying, is the Microsoft Exchange server a blob server for binary large object server? Anyway, so if you have a combination of the two where you have a localized cached version of what's on the cloud, in the event the cloud goes down, everything works exactly as is. But if something local fails, you have a pure cloud version of that. And then, of course, that'll sync on the back end. You have what could be the holy grail. The question I have is, have they architected this? And I think they've been working on this for over a decade. At least that's my experience. Well, it's been about 14 years. That's my experience in working with Microsoft back in the prior to Office 365 days, when they were working on an experimental version of what they now call VDI. And you remember, VDI was nothing more than VPS, which is nothing more than a Citrix box that had a very special special service to it. So I don't know. Going long-winded, saying, what if they invented something that is a hybrid and something we've all dreamed about, right?
Don't get me wrong. I love the pie in the cloud, pie in the sky idea. No pun intended. Yes, we've been going toward this for years. But here's my thing. This seems a little... I'm not faulting the writer of the article at all. I'm faulting Microsoft. This seems a little clickbaity, right? Because whatever version you do of this, you still need a local device which cannot run without an operating system. It cannot operate without a system to operate. Now, what is on that device, if it's a dumb terminal, if it's, you know, a thin PC, a thin client, whatever, or your cell phone or whatever, we've been talking about doing this forever. My cell phone, prior to being run over by 10 to 20 cars during rush hour.
Show it again, please.
So my cell phone, prior to being run over 10 to 20 times on the expressway, has the ability to connect to my PC wirelessly and give me a full desktop, right? And I can use it as a full desktop. And that's actually how I've been using it all day. So that, because obviously I can't see the screen and I'm not going to start cutting my fingers up, but I can use it on my desktop until I replace the phone. Easy. So these are not new things. So when Microsoft says we're moving to the cloud, well, yeah, but Windows 365 was a thing years ago, a couple years ago already. And before that, you're right. There was VDA, VDI, VPS. It's just, I don't know. What I do want to know, MSPs, what do you think? Are you excited for this? Is it, you know, humdrum, business as usual? Let us know. Tell us in the chat or tell us on our Discord. And we definitely want to hear from you going forward. But for now, Tony, I'm going to require you to come into my office from now on so we can do dispatch live and in person. And you're not going to have any problems with that, right?
And jumping into my next story from entrepreneur.com, the damaging results of the mandated return to office. Recent reports from Greenhouse, the Federal Reserve, and Unispace highlight the consequences of companies mandating return-to-office work policy, including higher-than-expected employee attrition and recruitment struggles. Almost half, 42%, of companies that enforce office returns saw greater attrition than anticipated. The Greenhouse report found 76% of employees would consider leaving their companies if flexible work schedules were abandoned. In the context of acquiring and retaining talent, flexible work policies have become paramount. The key reasons for employees switching jobs include better compensation, job security, career advancement opportunities, flexible work policies, and a more positive company culture. The study suggests that the switch from a flexible to traditional work model is equivalent to a 2-3% pay cut. To navigate these changing landscapes, companies need to account for the status quo and anchoring biases to understand their employees better and create a more inclusive workspace. Ray, we have literally from the beginning talked about moving employees from a centralized work environment to a distributed work environment and how it changes the landscapes of companies around the world, because now you're removing the physical barriers. However, if the mechanisms are not in place to support these remote locations, you're going to have problems. If the policies are not in place to support these remote work environments, you're going to have problems. And we've talked about this from the beginning, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I talked about policies first, processes to support the policies second, and then the technology to support the processes, which fall under the policies, third. The irony is that's all completely inverted. We get the technology first, we then define our processes, and then, oh, we'll bolt in the policies at the end. And we've talked about this from the beginning. Tell me your thoughts. How do you feel about people working remotely? Do you think it's important for people to come in the office? Is there a solution to where sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't? Talk to me.
I think you're missing the big picture, Tony. If you don't have the people because they all quit, then you have no problem with anything, any of the other stuff. Win, win, win. You're welcome. Problem solved. Mic drop. Now, so as Dustin Bolander likes to say, there's my hot take. No, so seriously speaking, though, I mean, personally, I love coming to the office only if everybody else is working remotely. It's become my little toy shop, right? Like, this is where I get stuff done. Because you forget, don't get me wrong, I love company culture. I love the people I work with mostly some of the time. Now, I, of course I do, but there are distractions, right? There are distractions. People walk into your office, knock on your door, pick up the phone, call. Like, there are distractions. It's very easy to sit at the water cooler and get lost for 30 minutes talking to people. And so there is a benefit to remote work. Think of every person you've ever heard saying, I like getting to the office early by myself so I can get stuff done. And I know you and I are definitely one of those people, right? Like, we've said this 1,000 times. We love getting to work before people are pinging us nonstop. And not that we don't like talking to people. It's that, you know, there has to be a little balance. And remote work offers that. And when you need to get up to go walk away, when you need to take a breather, focus on your mental health, go work out, go play some basketball, go play with the pets, whatever you want to do, you can do that at home or wherever you're working. And if you want to mix things up, go to a Starbucks, go to McDonald's, go to the park, yes, get a hotspot. You could work from anywhere. Most jobs you can work from anywhere. So, I mean, well, most jobs that can be remote, you can be remote literally anywhere, barring compliance concerns and some of the other stuff. You know, maybe if you work at the government, it's not a problem. Anybody can be online. But, So I don't get this fight to have people come into the office. These are the people that are still tied to the old ways.
Well, you know who sees this the most? The MSPs. The MSPs are literally dealing with all the end customers, the last mile, and developing the processes for them, and in a lot of cases, the policies. Huge fan of that. But most importantly, they are deploying the technology to support these remote locations, and they're witnessing firsthand attrition, productivity, the lack of productivity, and then the KPIs that are getting put in place with the tools to support the KPIs, because the KPIs are part of the policies involved. And so the MSPs, I would love to hear from you if you're seeing the remote workforce, frankly, being as less attrition. We're seeing more attrition. We're seeing maybe more technology is being put into place because it's finally matured to now support the remote workforce that's been absolutely required post-COVID. I would love to hear from the MSP community on that.
Absolutely. And you know what else I'd love to hear, Sony? Some notables.
Ooh, let's do some notables.
In our first notable mention, EncroChat takedown led to 6,500 arrests and $979 million seized, written by Bill Tulis of Bleeping Computer. The takedown of EncroChat, encrypted mobile communications platform, has led to the arrest of over 6,600 people and the seizure of $979 million in illicit funds. EncroChat offered secure communication features highly valued by criminals, but European law enforcement managed to infiltrate the platform, analyze millions of messages, and identify users. This resulted in the arrest of thousands of individuals involved in organized crime, drug trafficking, money laundering, and other illegal activities. The operation led to the seizure of drugs, vehicles, properties, weapons, cash, and the freezing of additional funds. After the AncroChat takedown, some users migrated to an alternative service called SkyECC, which was also monitored by the authorities, leading to further arrests and raids. A second notable mention, Windows 10 KB5027293 update, released with three new features and 14 changes, written by Lawrence Abrams of Bleeping Computer. Microsoft has released the optional KB5027293 preview cumulative update for Windows 10 22H2, featuring the three new features and 11 additional fixes or changes. The maintenance release addresses bugs causing crashes and network connection issues. The update introduces enterprise features, improves Chinese fonts and input, and fixes authentication bugs, but does not include security updates. Users can install the update manually through Windows Update settings or download it from the Microsoft Update catalog.
And jumping into my first notable from bleepingcomputer.com, Microsoft has updated Sysmon, that's the system monitor, a free tool used to monitor and block suspicious activity, to version 15.0, making it a protected process and adding a new feature log to the creation of executable files. Sysmon, which logs the events to the Windows event log, is used to extensively detect malicious behavior. Consequently, it has been a target for threat actors who might want to disable or tamper with it. With the new update, Microsoft has made the sysmon.exe executable a protected process, thus preventing the injection of malicious code into the process. The new version also updates the sysmon schema to version 4.90, introducing the file executable detected configuration option, which allows for the detection of newly created executable files on the monitored system. Despite its complexity and sparse documentation, Sysmon remains a highly beneficial tool in the fight against cyber threats. And jumping into my next notable from bleepingcomputer.com, the new Mockingjay process injection technique evades EDR detection. Cybersecurity firm Security Joe's discovery of a new process injection technique, Mockingjay, that can bypass endpoint detection and response, EDR, defenses, and run malicious code on compromised systems undetected. Unlike typical injection methods, Mockingjay doesn't use conventional Windows API calls, set special permissions, or start threads. The innovation approach uses a vulnerable DLL found in Visual Studio 2022 to inject the code, avoiding detection by EDR solutions, highlighting the importance of a holistic security approach.
For today's AI roundup from the Washington Post by Garrett DeVink, ChatGPT maker OpenAI faces lawsuit over how it used people's data. A California-based law firm named Clarkson has initiated a class action lawsuit against OpenAI, contending that OpenAI has massively breached copyrights and privacy by employing data scraped from the internet for training its AI model ChatGPT. The lawsuit filed in the Northern District of California posits a novel legal theory, arguing that OpenAI utilized content such as social media posts, blog entries, Wikipedia articles, and more without obtaining permission from the original authors, thus infringing on the rights of millions of individuals. This legal challenge addresses a central and unresolved question regarding the burgeoning field of generative AI technologies, which involves AI systems consuming extensive data from the internet to make inferences and respond to prompts. The law firm aims to represent individuals whose data was allegedly appropriated for commercial purposes and is seeking legal boundaries on AI training processes and compensation mechanisms for data use. The lawsuit also brings into focus the debate surrounding fair use in copyright law and whether altering data in a transformative manner justifies its utilization. Additionally, the suit accuses OpenAI of lack of transparency concerning how user data may be exploited for profit and raises concerns about the protection of underage users. This case is part of a growing trend of legal challenges faced by companies that are developing AI technologies. Yet another precedent-setting lawsuit is coming down the pike, and you know, it's yet to be seen what these verdicts are going to mean for the industry as a whole. One thing I can say is that I am not jealous of any of the judges that have to make a decision on these cases. Anyway, that's it for today's AI Roundup. I'm Phil Buck. Now back to Ray and Tony in the studio with some feedback from the audience.
And in feedback from the YouTubes, Kerry Wagner says, and that's a wrap, folks. Kerry, we appreciate you watching and supporting the show, buddy.
There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Later today at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, Channel Engage June, presented by the Channel Program. And on July 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Benchmark Presentation, presented by Syntion. And on July 6th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, How to Add Over 100,000 Annual Profit Without Finding a Single New Client, presented by Zomentum. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have, on July 2nd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the first episode of MSP Community Live. And on July 3rd at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, an MSP Dispatch special report, Ethical Marketing with Megan Killian of MKC Agency. And as always, on Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, MSP Dispatch, presented by the MSP Media Network.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm a jobaholic. We all have something in common. We all have a worst job story. Each episode, I'll welcome one guest to share their most insane worst job story. And in return, I'll share one of mine. Join me the first Friday of every month for new episodes of 38 at 38.
So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't, go ahead and hit it three times. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on the YouTubes or your favorite podcatcher. Just don't hit Elon or Zuck. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can propose your own stories and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-NETWORK. Tony, you missed the teaser because you had real life and work and stuff. And so, you know, I had done it before you jumped on. The last time I did some singing, Kelvin called me on it. And he asked me, who sings that song? And then it turned into the whole, you know, let them keep singing it kind of thing. So I'm apologizing in advance to your ears and our audience's ears. But I like to have fun on the teaser. So, and what are you doing for the fourth, man? With your boom, boom, boom.
Ooh, fourth. So my son broke his ankle in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practice. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, known as the gentle art. But normally I would say that the kids are doing chores, cleaning the house, but the things that this kid will do to get out of chores, it is fascinating. Break his ankle.
These kids nowadays are so lazy.
They're smart though. Smart. They're like, hey, snap my ankle. 4th of July, I think it's going to be barbecue. It's going to be Florida, which means it's going to be hot. And frankly, I got my new electric bike. I'm going to ride that thing around everywhere. I put on like 10 miles today. I love, love, love it. What about you?
Well, I showed you that detonator I got for the fireworks.
Hold on. Yeah. And oh, NSA. Yeah. NSA. Yeah. I'm talking to him right now. I know he's a detonator. I know. Okay. We'll talk later.
In the famous words of Meet the Fockers, bomb, 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 bomb.
Oh my gosh. So. Wait, hold on. Oh, you're back. Yeah. You can watch the podcast later. MSP Dispatch. Yeah. You're watching it in real time. It's not posted yet. Oh. You're watching us now. Okay.
They're backing it up.
Yes. Ray is saying backing it up right now.
There you go. So we started the episode, what we would do if you went missing a couple episodes. Now we're talking if I get, you know, renditions and I'm gone. And I expect you to come get me. But separate from your special set of skills, thank you for today's episode. It was a blast. Thank you, audience, for joining us. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
Take care, everyone. Be safe. Episode number 128. We're all done.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
In our first notable mention, EncroChack Takedown led six.
To navigate these changing landscapes, company needs to. Security affairs. Securityaffairs.com. Okay, here we go.